HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
You're very welcome to our HR Headquarters conversation. Today we're chatting to Rina Arnand, who is a neurodiversity consultant and founder of Being Inclusive, championing a future where neurodiversity is celebrated and all individuals have the opportunity to reach their full potential. Rina, hello.
Hello, thank you for having me today.
Well, we're delighted to talk to you. And I'm going to start, Rina, by asking you to tell us a little bit about your background and your journey into becoming a neurodiversity consultant.
Thank you. Yes. So I've had quite an interesting journey, I would say. I started my career as a lawyer and practiced for a few years before becoming an ombudsman. So I've always had at the back of my mind, something of a social activist kind of thread within me. And whilst I was working as an ombudsman, I specialized as well in cases involving race and disability discrimination. And I founded a team which dealt with the most vulnerable consumers in society. So often victims of abuse or people with very significant mental health challenges, and also a significant number of autistic consumers. Now, as I was doing all this work, it really piqued my interest. I became particularly interested in some of the barriers that people from marginalized groups in society faced. And as this was happening, I started to have some challenges with my own son. And after, it's a long story, so I won't go into it in the intro, but we received his autism diagnosis at the age of 5. He's 11 now. And it was really eye-opening for me. And the more I researched and could see how different groups in society experienced greater levels of marginalization based on their difference, it really made me want to make some kind of positive impact in this space. And so 3 years ago, I decided I would utilize my skills, upskill myself with more knowledge and practice, and start a consultancy which really helps organizations to embed neuro-inclusion into their workplaces. So they're really harnessing the talents of their people to the very best of their abilities. And it's great. It's going well. Since then, I've had my younger son's autism and ADHD diagnoses too, as well as my own. So we are quite a fun, not very quiet family on most days.
And a busy mum of two as well. But I might just ask by asking you just to explain, what is neurodiversity if somebody isn't quite familiar about the term?
Yeah, it's such a great question because I think sometimes it's a term used so often people are afraid to ask the question. Neuro essentially means mind and diversity means difference. So essentially, neurodiversity means having minds that are different. And I don't want to go too much into terminology because terminology is also very much based on preference. But generally speaking, everyone comes under the umbrella of neurodiverse because all of our minds are different from one another. But what we see is particular characteristics which are identified with certain conditions such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, and others. And those particular characteristics which make up those conditions people often call themselves neurodivergent or are a neurominority in that group. So neurodiversity, in essence, just means the difference of our minds.
Well, thank you for clarifying that before we kind of delve into this fascinating area. And I was thinking cognitive diversity brings enormous benefits to many teams. In your own kind of background, how can a HR manager proactively recruit and support people who are neurodivergent?
So I think, I agree that the cognitive diversity is good in any organization. And in fact, the research shows us that organizations that really kind of harness this and really embrace different ways of thinking do well, not just from an employee well-being perspective, but also productivity-wise and at their bottom line. They ultimately make more money too. So if you are an organization that wants to be forward-thinking, and I would say particularly as people are talking more about neurodiversity and candidates are also looking more proactively to employers to be more on the front foot when it comes to neuro inclusion. I think, you know, as an organization, this is not something you would want to miss out on. Now, there's lots of things organizations can do to attract neurodivergent talent, I'm happy to share some tips on that. But it's really important to remember it's not just about attracting them, it's also about retaining them. And that's, you know, that's a point at which the research demonstrates to us that where lots of organizations do fall down. So they'll get them in, get the candidates in, but then the infrastructure and the support isn't there. And often those neurodivergent people will not be supported and will end up leaving. So, but, you know, to answer your question in terms of attracting neurodivergent talent, firstly, I would say, you know, offer the ability to apply for positions in multiple formats and ensure that any online mechanisms to attract your candidates are also accessible. So, you know, can those platforms be used with screen readers? Do they do speech to text and text to speech? Can you adjust the fonts, etc., etc.? If you do need to have interviews, and I say that because it's not always necessary to have to interview a candidate, or if you do, it doesn't have to be the first thing that you do. Depending on the type of job, it could be anywhere in that process, or potentially not at all. You could have a job trial or something else. But if you do interviews, think about flexible options. Think about doing it virtually, allowing some extra time, maybe sharing the questions in advance, and that can really help to reduce anxiety. Also, be aware that, you know, it's really important for organizations to have kind of like a cultural awareness around how neurodiversity can present. So for example, you know, culturally, we would perhaps expect people to make eye contact during an interview. And if someone doesn't, we might think, oh, they're hiding something, or maybe they're a bit shifty. But actually, for a lot of neurodivergent people, making that eye contact can be painful, but also it can be distracting. You know, when I'm in my deepest thinking, and I'm, you know, even in this situation, you can't see me, but I'm looking off to the corner as I'm processing my thoughts, because if I were to try to focus on one particular point, I wouldn't be able to gather those thoughts. So it's really important we look at, are we measuring people for how well they fit in to the status quo, or are we actually allowing them to bring their whole selves to these interview or application processes and really seeing kind of the gold that is within them. You know, there's lots of other things you can do during onboarding, such as providing mentorship opportunities and creating personalized training plans. And, you know, most things, if not the vast majority of adjustments for neurodivergent people, are low to no cost and benefit all employees. So it's not that these are only things for neurodivergent people, that only neurodivergent people will benefit from. Actually, it's far from the truth.
And you make lots of very interesting points there. But I was wondering, it's about retaining your staff and those, you know, that gold that you mentioned. How can managers create neuro-inclusive environments where people can thrive?
So there's lots of ways. Really, fundamentally, it will come down to the culture that is created in an organization. So ideally, an organization should be looking to not have to do different initiatives for different people in the long, long, long term. I appreciate for now to get that process rolling, you might have to, but the longer term vision should be just the organization is inclusive. But ways in which you can create, you know, a greater awareness, certainly, of neuroinclusion. Firstly, is training for managers on neurodiversity. And I would really say this is quite high up on the priority list, because the research published by Birkbeck University both last year and this year, it's one of the most significant reports in this space, again shows the first point of call for neurodivergent people is their manager, over and above HR, over and above ERGs and employee benefits providers. And when those interactions do not go well, and when managers aren't informed on how to manage conflict appropriately with a neurodivergent person, things can unravel very, very quickly. The other thing is also, when there's a lack of consistency in the manager population, often very talented neurodivergent employees will not apply for promotion and for other jobs, because there's that uncertainty that they will potentially, you know, receive a manager who doesn't get them at the same level as their current one. And that's a loss of talent to the organization. It's less productivity, it's less money. And that person is in a job where they're not really fulfilling the best of their potential. So upskilling managers, I would say, should be a core priority. I think another thing that's really helpful is creating spaces for neurodivergent people to create that community. So whether that's an employee resource group, whether that's bringing in people, because not everyone may feel safe to share if it's a new initiative in an organization. So bringing in external speakers to run, you know, training sessions or webinars or lunch and learns, whatever it is, but just to create, show that the company is taking it seriously and cares about their people. That's a really great way. And then I suppose even, you know, showcasing what you are doing or what your plans are is another great way. So if you're in your recruitment, do talk about what you've done so far and do talk about your plans, because that's attractive to a neurodivergent employee. There's that sense of they're going to support me and actually I feel like I could belong in this organization. So that's just a few.
I know, and some really great points that you mentioned there. And as you were talking, Rena, I was thinking of your own journey as a mother, a mum of two. Often employees who are caregivers to neurodivergent children appear to be a key segment of the workforce that are being overlooked. How can we support the caregivers to neurodivergent children?
It's a really great question, actually. And this is an area I feel, obviously, from my personal experience, extremely passionately passionate about. And I call them, my term for this group is called the unseen majority, because these caregivers are in every organization, and in lots of them, they're just not seen. So at least one in seven employees are juggling their work with caregiving responsibilities. And research published by Carers UK shows that only 5% of organisations actually have formal policies in place to support these employees. That can just have a massive impact on the well-being and the productivity of those employees, because they're managing really intense home lives and then, you know, often quite intense job roles or responsibilities at work as well. And that can have a longer term impact on them.
Your point that you were making there about the unseen majority, the caregivers, does, you know, being a caregiver, does that affect their work performance or maybe their thoughts about going for those job promotions?
Yes, it doesn't affect. So I think there's a misconception and there's a lot of stigma in workplaces that women, when they become mothers, are somehow less dedicated or less able or capable. And that is one of the contributing factors that mean often women, and I say often women because women are the majority of the caregivers, but men do it too. But often with women, because of these perceptions, they don't share the reality of what their life really looks like, and they bear that toll personally. And I can certainly attest to this from my own experience. And in terms of kind of their work responsibilities, CIPD research shows that 65% of working carers have had to forego career opportunities because of their caring responsibilities. And a further 30% of working carers have reduced their hours of work because of their caring role, and 36% have refused a job offer or a promotion, or they've decided they're not going to apply for a job because of these responsibilities. So is it that they can do the job? No, it's to do with the impact of having their caring responsibilities. And for organizations who don't see this as a need and therefore don't have the infrastructure in place to support them.
And what sort of infrastructure, Rena, would you suggest is in an organisation to support in that situation? And I'm interested in, you mentioned women. Is it women who are predominantly bearing the brunt of caregiving responsibilities in society from your experience?
So from the research shows that it is 59%, I believe, are women. So there is a percentage of men who are also carers. And I would imagine, though I haven't seen the research, I imagine there would be some research even around whether men share their caring responsibilities or not. But the area I'm more familiar with is the impact on women. And yes, the majority are women who are working carers, essentially, is the term. So in terms of answering your question, what steps can HR leaders take to, I suppose, to ensure that their neurodivergent staff are feeling seen. I think firstly, it would start with having inclusive policy development. So really crafting policies that support flexible working and provide resources. And a research report published by City and Guilds this year showed that 28% of organizations that they surveyed had no accommodations in place for their employees who had neurodivergent children. And only 5% of, as I mentioned at the beginning of our chat, only 5% of organizations actually have dedicated caregiver policies. So I think certainly policy development is really, really important. Also, you know, the access to resources. So being able to have employee benefits providers that provide counseling services, or having also, you know, sessions, like often organizations, it'll be Black History Month and they'll have some fantastic sessions on Black History. It'll be Neurodiversity Awareness Month. We'll have sessions on neurodiversity. What are we doing for our carers? And how are we making sure our carers are seen? And also, you know, because by reflecting that, it opens up the conversation for people to say, hey, that impacts me too. Having support groups at work is also really beneficial. We had 14 staff networks at my last organization, and in none of them did I feel I could show up as British Indian woman who was the carer for an autistic child. That identity did not fit in anywhere. So I started my own support group for parents of children with disabilities. And it was wonderful because once it was set up, people came. And often, you know, as fellow parents, we just needed some space to share some of our challenges. So yeah, and again, managerial training, I'll come back to this point. It's really important that managers really visit their own biases and assumptions around their employees who have caregiving responsibilities.
I think that training is so important for all managers and HR professionals, if they are to ensure that existing policies are inclusive and reflect the needs of caregivers. Perhaps the first place to start is at proper training levels, so that they are educated and informed so they can provide the proper support.
Yes, I agree. You know, there's lots of ways to do that training, but also making sure it's not a one and done training. It's something that's revisited. And because if you are a manager, you will have either a neurodivergent employee or an person in your team who is impacted, whether that's as a carer or in some other way. So, you know, it's not like a hiring training, which is, okay, well, I'll do it at the time I'm hiring. There will be neurodivergent people in your organization. And so, you know, they're already having an experience whilst they're there, but are you aware of that experience? Is it one that they're having by default, or is it one that as an organization you have curated for them? And I think that's really, really important. And just really to add to my earlier point around, you know, supporting caregivers, it's not about doing anyone any favors, because women and men who are caregivers bring an awful lot to our workplaces. They bring resilience and tenacity, time management, task prioritization, research, problem solving skills, volumes of patience and empathy and compassion, the ability to multitask like you wouldn't believe, you know, crisis management, you name it. If you're dealing with children with additional needs and, you know, legal services and all of this kind of stuff, there's a phenomenal skill set there. And, you know, the skill set's there. It's up to the organization if they're going to tap into it or not.
Yeah, and as you're talking, I can hear your passion, and I know your own company is a multi-award-winning company. And I was really struck on your website that there's an open invitation to all communities for an open dialogue to see how, you know, people can connect and you can develop a stronger and more representative voice for people that have neurodiversity. What advice would you give to companies if they want to really embrace this and be, you know, a leader in their own field and win those awards and really kind of have a very positive neurodiversity policy?
I would say have a vision and accept that it will take time to build. Neurodiversity inclusion is not it's not overnight. And actually, it's very disingenuous when organizations perhaps perform inclusion in a very performative way. So, for example, having particular talks at particular times of year, and then they never talk about neuroinclusion or any other type of inclusion ever again. And, you know, people, we're all humans, we're all perceptible, you know, people. We can smell inauthenticity a mile away. So, you know, it's about making that commitment, accepting that the fundamental behind all of this is trust and creating that psychological safety for people to feel safe to share what's truly going on for them, whether that's because of their sexuality, whether that's because of their neurodivergence, their race, their ethnicity, or any other protected identity. If you can trust that you can be who you are and it won't be used against you, that is the point at which you can then really flourish. But that psychological safety is key. Now, I can say that in a sentence, but that's not necessarily giving you practical steps. So kind of how do you create that? And I would say it's taking a multi-pronged approach. Firstly, you need to look at your own data. What do you know about your people? What do you not know about your people? Where do you want to get to? And why is this important to you? Because if your why is not powerful, it's not going to drive you. If you're going to create a metric around this, and it's purely based on increased, increasing your bottom line, people aren't going to respond well to that. If you care about your people, if you really harness the loyalty that often neurodivergent people bring to their workplaces, and what the data shows us is, you know, the high levels of creativity, the hyper-focus, the out-of-the-box thinking, you know, the key quantum leaps we've made in society, there's often a neurodivergent person behind that. And, you know, these people are, you know, we're all here, we're all everywhere. It's just a matter of, you know, bringing us in safely so we can, you know, shine our magic, I would say. But building psychological safety. And I guess how, you know, if I were to say, how would you do that? I would say, be honest about where you are and where you want to get to. Create employee resource groups, which are safe spaces for people to share what's going on for them. But then fund and sponsor them properly. So I would say employee resource groups should have an executive sponsor, and they should also be given funds to be able to, you know, host the talks and the other inclusion initiatives that they want to. And there should be a dotted line between those employee resource groups and HR development of policy. So they shouldn't be sitting alone in a silo just as a community social group. This is actually your hub of data that will tell you how your organization is performing, should you choose to adequately resource and take care of that body of people. And then do look at your policies, what policies are absent. Obviously, you can't have a policy for every single thing, but you certainly can look at what reasonable adjustments are available, what can you make, what's your carer's policy, are you giving the bare minimum or more? And actually, even what the law provides, I would even say as a carer, but also the data shows, it's not enough. So you've got to look beyond just what the law provides and look at flexible working more broadly. But those are just a few ways that if you really were thinking, okay, we're going to get serious about neuroinclusion, where do we start? Well, a great place to start is with your data and your vision.
And I think a good thing to mention at this point is that Neurodiversity Celebration Week 2025, it's coming up Monday, March 17th. It's going on to the 23rd of March. And an organisation maybe could plan now to start thinking about that. And I know, Rena, you also wrote a fantastic article on our very own website, HR Headquarters, about supporting caregivers of neurodivergent children. And your own company, Being Inclusive, offers great support to people. If anybody's listening in and maybe wants to reach out to you to kind of maybe you come on board and help them create the culture that you talk about, they can do that.
Absolutely. It would be a pleasure. And yes, absolutely. That's exactly what we do. We partner with the organization, and everything we create is bespoke, whether that's your lunchtime learning sessions or whether that's consultancy and designing e-learning for your managers. It's all bespoke to where you are at. So you don't feel like someone is dragging you somewhere that you're not prepared for. But yeah, as you say, Neurodiversity Celebration Week is coming up, and it's a great opportunity for you to really make your mark on where you stand as an organization. And there are lots of ways you can do this. You can host educational initiatives. So as I mentioned, you could pebble different workshops or seminars or lunch and learns over the course of that month or in the run-up to it as well, to demonstrate your ongoing commitment to neuroinclusion. You could, depending on the level of psychological safety in your organization, you could either encourage employees to share their own neurodiversity journeys, or there are many videos and other resources that you could put out that have already been created, where people share their personal stories around neurodiversity and being parent carers of neurodivergent children, just to get that conversation going. And managers can even use that as a topic to then have a conversation with their teams about. And also, you know, if you're doing things that are positive, like offering flexible work schedules or personalized support in any way, showcase that to your employees. Often employees don't know what wonderful things are already going on in their organization. I had been in mine for so many years and not identified as a carer. In my head, being a carer was someone who looked after perhaps their elderly parents. And it was only on an off-the-cuff conversation I was having with someone who chaired the Carers Network, who said, "You do realize that you're a carer?" And I said, "Oh no, I don't think so." She said, "You've got an autistic child and your life is fundamentally different because of your caregiving responsibilities." And I said, "Yes, they are." And she said, "Therefore you are a carer." So I think, you know, often people don't identify, and so they won't necessarily be aware of what organizations offer. So it's a great chance to really celebrate and showcase the wonderful things you are offering. And also, you know, do partner with external organizations, people like myself or other people who provide resources and speakers around neurodiversity. You might choose to focus on an aspect, maybe autism or ADHD or dyscalculia. You know, there's so many topics, but I think the best thing is to just start as well, not to over-engineer it.
Well, I have no doubt we'll be chatting to you again in the future, possibly around March 17th, Neurodiversity Celebration Week. But for now, Rina Ard from Being Inclusive, thank you very much for talking to us at HR Headquarters.
Thank you very much for having me.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.